Journey, how are you? Ready to start a new series? Yeah, all right. Y'all ready to start the series?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so the only way I know how to start is to reach back into my youth. That's a long reach. To a movie that I not only had nightmares about, but I had daymares. I mean, whew. And so I'll give you a hint. Let's see if you can guess. Some of the terrifying creatures in this movie were flying monkeys. Even saying it brings shudders to my spine. I imagine myself being carried away to the evil witch's castle by those same flying monkeys. Wherever I was, they found their way in. So the Wizard of Oz, the story actually has a very appropriate foundational launch point for our series. If you remember, the hero of the story, Toto, at just the right time in the movie when all seemed to be lost, Toto decided that he was going to call sham on the whole scary wizard thing. You remember? And he went over to this curtained area, and with his little bitty teeth, he grabbed a corner and pulled back the curtain to reveal a smallish, weak-looking figure manipulating controls frantically, trying to maintain the illusion. You remember that? Perfect beginning for our series. I'm not going to say why. Because it seems that many in our culture, if not most, if not all, from time to time, have been fooled by an illusion of this mega personality called science. Let me offer another word, because actually I like the word science. Science is a good word when used appropriately. Don't you agree? I'm going to introduce you to another word if you've never heard it. Scientism. Scientism. Okay, you want me to give you a definition for scientism as we launch? And so it makes sense that we've subtitled the series Following the Evidence Wherever It Leads. Scientism, and this is from the scientific community, nobody with an agenda other than good science. Scientism is a matter of putting too high a value on natural science in comparison with other branches of learning or culture. Did you get that? So scientism is actually allowing science to leave its lane and take on perspectives not appropriate to its pursuit, other branches of learning or culture. All right, you with me so far? We good? This is what we're going to pursue in the course of our series, and we're going to try to maintain a proper identification of the little man behind the curtain that's frantically manipulating an image that has a lot of us cloudy or in the dark, fooled, bamboozled, especially the Christian community, because the postulation is, the idea that the image is trying to continue to reinforce is that there is absolutely no place for science and faith in God or even a divine mind. So for the course of this, at least this message, you may say, Mitch didn't do much preaching today. I'm going to try to maintain a deliberative style of communication that I would see appropriate when talking to someone who has been duped by the little man behind the curtain, and we all are prone to it. So let me start again. So the image is reinforcing in our culture now for several decades that there is no place for a companionship between science and the possibility of a divine mind who designed what we see when we look in the mirror, with the emphasis on the question of how did biological life begin? You see, here's the key. So you heard it here first, or maybe you got it reinforced. If we go astray when it comes to biological origins, we will never find our way back when it comes to a consistently biblical worldview that gives life, health, and satisfaction. Did that make sense? So, interestingly, even in the scientific community, the relationship between science and scientism is always being bantered about. For example, here is a quote from a Nobel Prize winner in physics. I think he won the award in the late 60s, and I'm not sure when the quote came. The world needs to wake up. Church, the world needs to wake up from the long nightmare of religion. Flying monkeys. Anything we scientists can do to weaken the hold of religion should be done. Now, that doesn't sound like objective science to me. I don't know about you. Anybody? See, and this is where we need to recognize, even for ourselves, church, that all of us bring assumptions and experiences and ideas and propositions to the table whenever we consider questions large or small. And there are some things that we want to see as outcomes based on what we've experienced and our desires to see outcomes. They may or may not follow the evidence as it's revealed. True? And may, in fact, be our greatest contribution to civilization. Now, I thought splitting of the atom was a pretty significant contribution to civilization. But in this case, Dr. Weinberg, probably a good Jewish boy like me, he thinks that a philosophical move to weaken the grip of religion on culture could be the greatest contribution. It's almost like the same picture I painted at the beginning of the little man behind the curtain presenting an overbearing image. Dr. Weinberg would say that the image is one of religion, and the weak little person behind the curtain is the fact that it has no bearing or strength or validity. You see that? The argument goes in all directions. On the other hand, in the scientific community, we have quotes like this from Dr. James Tour, a nanoscientist. A nanoscientist, I'm not certain of everything, but he's got to be really small. These are the jokes, people. He says, only a rookie. I'm not sure if he's speaking directly to his constituents that are doing science with him. Only a rookie who knows nothing about science would say that science takes away from faith. If you really study science, it will bring you closer to God. So you see that that's actually a philosophical statement too. Dr. James Tour has a set of prior commitments or assumptions that he's convinced of. The question is Dr. James Tour, like Dr. Weinberg, like filling your name here, prepared to follow the evidence wherever it leads, particularly when it comes to the question, for the purpose of this particular message as we launch, biological origins? Because again, if we don't get origins correctly, we'll never find our way home. Do you agree with that proposition? I don't know, Mitch. So in reality, this is just an ongoing passion of mine, and I think it should be an ongoing passion of yours if you're a Christian. Too often the Christian community is accused, if you will, of anti-intellectualism. You know what that means? It means that we refuse to use our mind, the very gift that we've been given by our Creator, to reason through the world. So then, this series, sometimes fairly specifically, sometimes just as a jumping off point, is based in a book by Dr. John Lennox. I like the fact that Dr. John didn't put doctor in front of his name. He wanted to make this book accessible, and it is. I commend it to you. It's only 120 pages long. I had several people during the course of the first message come out and say, hey man, while you were talking, I ordered the book. I'm like, you're on your phone? But that's okay. That's okay. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask you to utilize that digital device toward the end of our message together for purposes of your own thought. So I commend this book to you. He's a doctor of mathematics. Now this should carry weight. At Oxford. Okay, how about that? All right, so therefore, this is what Dr. John says when he is faced with another conversation of someone either in the scientific community or without who approaches him and says, well, you know, Dr. John, it's obvious that science has progressed to the point where there's absolutely no need to consider a place for a divine mind or an intelligent mind. Let's just back up further. Let's leave out the word divine, an intelligent designer. After all, Dr. John, science has answered all those important questions. And you may be thinking the same thing. At least the image has continued to reinforce that to you in your info streams, your content streams, across the pail of the cultural soup, hasn't it? So this is how Dr. John responds inwardly. I sigh inwardly and prepare myself, which is an important word if we're going to have these conversations, and prepare myself for a long conversation in which I try to untangle the many assumptions, misunderstandings, and half-truths that have been absorbed uncritically. Did you know that you can absorb uncritically? So that the idea is that I'm a sponge for propositions and ideas. And if you place me as a sponge for propositions and ideas in a soup, without some kind of discernment, I am just going to absorb and retain the nuances of those propositions and assumptions and ideas, right? From the cultural soup that we swim in. So this is what I've done. I've taken Dr. John's statement and I parsed it along the way, adding some flavor of my own. I'd like to see if you agree. We swim in the cultural soup of ideas. We swim in a consistent barrage of ideas about the important and really too much of the unimportant things of life. But when it comes to science, the ideas are all around us. Do you agree with that? So it's almost like I swim in it. It's like asking a fish if a fish knows it's wet. A fish doesn't really know it's wet, but the fact is that fish is immersed in water. This is just the life that I know. These ideas may or may not include assumptions, misunderstandings, and half-truths. You believe that? Ideas have consequences, and bad ideas have victims. Do you agree with that? See, every outcome that's proven in behavior begins with an idea. There is no behavior without an idea at its source, typically. I mean, unless you hit me on my funny bone, then there's an immediate non-idea generated response. Apart from a commitment, this is the important part. This is the uncritically absorption part. Apart from a commitment to vet ideas in the cultural soup, we uncritically absorb, meaning we assent to, we submit to, and we believe many of these assumptions, misunderstandings, and half-truths. Are you still with me? Now, I believe that in a culture such as ours, it's so fast-paced, so busy, we're so busy trying to make our name, make our nest, or make our nut, that we often are just absorbing without even recognizing. And some things are very important that are coming at us to discern. But our discernometer hasn't been finely tuned because we're so scattered in other places. Agree or disagree? This is a highly interactive time together. So, what I want to do is start this week with asking the right questions. We're going to ask questions of science. We're going to ask questions of the scientist. We're going to ask questions of scientism. And then we are going to see how scientism has clouded our vision. And then we're going to ask a most important question, an important of outcomes as a result of absorbing uncritically assumptions, misunderstandings, and half-truths about origins. Believe me, I don't know how deeply you've connected the dots, but I would offer that almost every major dysfunction in culture is connected to where we've arrived as the image has convinced us of origins. Every major dysfunction in culture can be connected to a wrong understanding of origins. And this is the actual debate at its core. This is science versus scientism. Scientism, again, is natural science getting out of its lane and taking on pursuits and answers that it has absolutely no discipline, no qualification to answer. And yet it continues to encroach. It continues to gobble. And it continues to insist that we buy its propositions. Okay, so the first question, and this is not, so in your bulletin I have question 1, 2, 3, and 4. But this is actually the question that must underlay all of them. What is a Christian's responsibility in culture when it comes to important questions of culture that are impacting the culture deeply? And I could go across the biblical text and reinforce the reality that my intelligent mind has equipped me with an intelligent mind. He's designed me. It's designed. Now you say, Mitch didn't, Brandon. He was talking about like it and the watchmaker and all that stuff. But remember, I'm backing all the way up, and I'm talking like I would talk to a person in culture who has been influenced by the image. I don't want to go directly to the divine. I want to start with a proposition that scientism has baffled us. Does that make sense? So, I could go across the biblical text and reinforce the fact that I am given as a believer, as a Christian, the responsibility to think well about cultural significance. What it is in culture that is either eroding or reinforcing life and health. Here's a proposition. I cannot go against the grain of the created order without incurring many splinters. Do you agree with that? So, the question begins with, what is my responsibility to speak to a culture going against the grain and people who are splinter laden? What is my personal responsibility? What is in it for me? See, because I can't speak to the culture well unless I'm confident and secure in what's been spoken to me about who I am and about my security and significance and responsibility and my purpose and my responsibility to someone outside myself. So, I could go all over the text, and you should actually vet me on this, church, because any single verse that's used to explode a pretty significant proposition should be suspect. But I believe this is appropriate, and I can back it up across the text, but we don't have time for that. I'll be glad to reinforce that with you in other places. Paul says to the church in Corinth, "We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to the obedience or to obey Christ." This is normal Christian responsibility. This is not anything for scholars. This is not anything for professors. This is not anything for pastors. This is normal Christian, written to normal Christians in Corinth in the first century, and now broadcast out throughout the centuries as Christian responsibility. Now, one way we like to destroy, who likes to destroy? We like to destroy by rant, don't we? We like to rant. We know what's right. We know what's wrong. We get on Facebook. We tweet it out. We do it on my Instagram story. This is it. Ah. What I've discovered is that an emphasis on rant might indicate a lack of preparation for the conversation. I don't know how I would put the sequence together or tell the story right or give you things to think about. All I know is if I just blast it as loud as I can, as long as I can, somehow I feel vindicated, and you're wrong. That is not our purpose. The purpose here from this text is to actually cast down. I think the King James illustration or translation says to cast down. We cast down arguments. So when content comes into my radar screen, I should be prepared to identify it for what it is. And when the image bully of scientism wants to tell me again and again that the question of origins has been answered finally with no argument, that should be an immediate red flag. The question is, am I willing to go the extra mile or two to prepare myself with content and understand why that's not a valid assumption? And the evidence is all over the place, especially within the scientific community. This is something that it might surprise you today, but I'll talk more of that later. So this is the proper place of Christian thought. We should be prepared, as Dr. Lennox said, to think critically, as Dr. Lennox said, so that we don't absorb assumptions, half-truths, and misunderstandings in this most important area of life, and that is, how does life begin? Where did life begin? So, question one, what is science? Science is a good word. I love this word. Did you know that prior to the late 1800s, that almost all good science was done by people who were committed to the idea of a transcendent designing mind? If you like, for current nomenclature, an intelligent designer. Did you know that? That there was someone outside of us, some mind, that brought all this into being through an amazingly intricate design. And now, since the 1800s, that's been slowly eroded. And again, the idea of God, now I'm speaking as a preacher because I'm about to laugh, the idea of God has been dismissed. But I wouldn't necessarily do that in a conversation with someone who's lost in cultural soup, right? What is science? Science is the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the objective, systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world. What did that say? Behavior of what? Physical and natural world through observation and experiment. Now, we all know that if you had ninth grade biology and some chemistry in college, that you went into the lab and you saw things, you felt things, you touched things, you smelled things. Sometimes you smelled things. And then you saw if you could repeat, you see if you can repeat those things. That's called empiricism, doing empirical research to try to reproduce consistent outcomes, right? That's science in the natural world. And that's a good word. So then what is a scientist? A scientist is testing scientific ideas. A scientist is testing hypotheses and theories which are at the core of the process of science. It is the job of the science, of the scientist, to collect all plausible... You know the difference between objectivity and subjectivity? Do you know the difference? The objective view is that I stand above all the possibilities and see them as all plausible until the evidence shows me that they can be dismissed. The honest evidence, right? A subjective view is I pretty much know how I want the thing to turn out. So therefore, even if evidence might start to indicate that it won't turn out that way, I find a way to wiggle around the showing of the evidence so that my presumptions are as expected, right? All plausible objective explanations and to use scientific testing to filter through them, retaining ideas that are supported by the evidence and discarding the others. So that's science, good definition. That's a scientist, good definition. But again, no scientist, like no individual, comes to a set of possibilities without some presumption. The question is, can I set aside presumption to pursue honesty? When does science become scientism? Science becomes scientism when I allow my prior commitments to cloud my objectivity, resulting in reluctance or refusal to follow the evidence wherever it leads. Have you heard that term before, prior commitment? I have a prior commitment to an outcome, so don't bother me with the facts. And you may be thinking, Mitch, man, you're talking about, this is not your lane. You're right, it's not. I'm not a nanoscientist. I'm not a physicist. I'm not a chemist. However, we are so rich in conversation that's available to all about how all these hypotheses continue to be tested and they're broadcast, distributed, and available for evaluation? We are in a great time, church. Did you know that? We know what's going on behind the scientific curtain. Because scientists who both have prior commitments that cloud their objectivity and scientists who continue to strain toward setting prior commitments aside so objectivity is maintained continue to show us their results. It is a good time to have a filter developed, a discernometer. I used to call it a meter, but this is church. And you might ask, why would a scientist do such a thing? Ladies and gentlemen, the reasons are many. Because in a culture where the image bully not just tells the culture, but tells the scientific community what it must believe and what it must pursue, there is grant money at stake. There is tenure at stake. There is status and reputation at stake. There are actual positions within academic and scientific community at stake. And typically, when my livelihood is at stake, I'm at my greatest risk of caving. And believe me, what's going on behind the curtain is clear. It's so interesting. But what continues to be broadcast to culture and the professional realms is that you have no status or standing as a scientist if you adhere to anything but naturalistic explanations for the origin of life, which behind the curtain have been proven to be unsatisfactory again and again and again. And it all springs from the origin of species. Charles Darwin. Now, if we could bring Charles Darwin up here in kind of a holographic interview, and we were to inform him, if he didn't know already, if we were to inform him about all the scientific, chemical, biological advancements in research capability that have been exponentially improved since he left the scene, and how all of those methods have tested his hypotheses about the origin of life, he would holographically go, "What are you people thinking? If this is all or none of what's been proven that I proposed, cast this down. Puke it out. Get rid of it. It's invalid. Start over." There are some aspects to Charles Darwin's origins that are valid. But as to the origin of life, the biological data needed in irreducible complexity. That's a lot of words. I'm just going to give that a minute. What we're seeing is we can study and empiricize and reproduce to a certain foundation, but all of that is negative when it comes to the complexity needed to write code for life. And yet, even though that's shown again and again to be true behind the curtain, we keep pulling the levers and going back again to the foundations that Charles Darwin set and just repeating the futility again and again. If you don't have these resources, I'd be glad to send them your way. Toto has revealed the man behind the curtain. And that should be good news for the mind, for dignity, for identity, for purpose, for significance. Because once you cast down the idea of a divine or an intelligent designer, you now do away with everything except a random, undirected, purposelessness existence. Purposeless existence. Did you realize that? And did you know that that's a bad idea? And did you know that bad ideas have consequences and victims? Did you know that? Did you know that everything you see in culture today that's dysfunctional and deadly can be connected back to this bad idea? Did you know that? Do you think I'm exaggerating? I don't know how long I can stay in this position. Science becomes scientism when I've already predetermined what the outcomes will be, regardless of the evidence. Now, believe me, like 8 or 9 years ago when I started digging into this, I ran up against it again and again. Why would people who began with honesty and passion in a field that they were gifted in, why, how can you be conditioned into this? Well, church, the answer is the same for us. When we think and drink uncritically, there are many things about the Christian faith that you hold that have absolutely nothing to do with the Bible. Uh-oh. Sorry, did this take a bad turn? But it's true. So, this is when science becomes scientism. So what prior commitment has ruled scientism since the late 1800s? Scientism. Now, what I'm about to show you is a really good set of words and processes for science, but a very poor and unsatisfying pursuit for scientism. Science outside its lane. The rule of methodological naturalism. That's a really good scientific term. What it says is we have methods to test the physical and natural world, and this is what we will pursue. We will make observations about the physical and natural world, about the eyeball, about the human systems, about how plants work, about how planets work, about cosmology, and we will now repeat the method until we come up with some satisfying hypotheses. But once you take methodological naturalism and try to apply it things outside of nature, like biological, digital formatting necessary for life, at its very beginning, that question has never been answered through methodological naturalism, nor will it ever be. It's irreducibly complex. It screams designer. It screams intelligence. It screams purpose. It screams significance. It screams a direction of all the cosmos toward what's not, this, man, I don't know how deep you like this, toward the anthropomorphic principle. Did you know that physically, ID'd by physics, the places that we live around this globe are perfectly designed for the human engine? And all of life that proceeds, I said human engine first because now I'm going back to being a preacher. The human engine is the supreme creation of the supreme creator. But did you know that in all the cosmos, the set, the infinite set of physical necessities demanded to produce you exist only in this nano environment? When compared to the cosmos. So, in its proper lane, methodological naturalism is an amazing tool for scientists. When used to describe things outside its lane, it is toxic and degrading to the human engine. How is scientism clouding your vision? I would say, first of all, it clouds our vision when we really are not interested in anything but pursuing our own life, even as we watch culture degrade because of buying into a bad idea, which has victims. Because eventually, the victims are us, right? Our kids, our families, our culture. It's really not complicated. It's really not. The question at hand is, how did biological life begin? Charles Darwin gave us a set of propositions. The best efforts of Darwinian evolutionary biologists continue to test them again and again, and the trapdoor opens and they have to flush. Now, certain things, maybe I said it in the first service, I don't know if I said it here, certain things that Darwin proposed are true, like adaptation within species. That's true. I would call that, if you have a picture, a prior commitment to a divine or intelligent mind, that's like, wow. I mean, seasons change, climatological variations happen. So these things are built in. So I know I've gone like really, I don't know if I went deeper this time than last. But what I hope to do is just to let us all know that the curtain has been pulled back. And behind the curtain, the little man is still doing this. Because there's so much at stake for the little man community. I'm not diminishing scientists. These people are brilliant. I mean, but brilliance doesn't mean wisdom. I know that for, I'm not brilliant, but I'm not wise either. So, why does this conversation matter about where life begins? What are the implications? I've hinted at some. So here's what I want you to do. You still have your phone out from ordering the book? I want you to interact with just our conversation today and say why this conversation matters. The conversation that we've tried to clarify that when we subject ourselves to the bullying of the image, the bad idea, what are the outcomes? Why does this matter? And if you don't want to, I'd love to see it on your card. We had a lot of good responses in the first service, so don't be afraid to shoot it, write it. I'm going to give you a minute. Y'all come on up. Let me know if anybody else is writing that needs a couple minutes. Just so you know, Journey, if you're like a Journey folk, a Journey family person, I'm going to be using these more and more because I think we need to consider things together. Right? So use this media to ask questions, to give feedback, to put your own ideas down. One thing I want to say is, I want to say a few more things. If you're someone in the public school system and you're a believer, you've got a tough job, but you're called to engage, right? The framework of education when it comes to this question of origins has been toxic for decades. We're not even an alternative to Darwinian evolution as the origin of life is even considered. Which, if you know the history of litigation in the courts, the thing has been flipped totally on its head, right? So if you're in the public school system, man, you're in a great spot. You need support, you need encouragement, you need to have influence in these kids' lives because a person is more influential than a textbook or even exam, right? Isn't that right? So this is Mitch's take, and I've already said it several times on why this question matters. Ideas have consequences, bad ideas have victims, and they're usually children. I love Foster Parent Night Out on the Journey, but I wish it didn't exist. Do you see the connection between an explosion of children in the system and the idea that there is no transcendent, intelligent mind that we're accountable to? Do you see the connection? Have you ever thought of the connection? Do you know that millions of babies have been destroyed in the womb in the last several decades? And a primary driver is the idea that all life is purposeless, random, and undirected? And therefore, since it is, as a moral agent, I'm free to just let loose my appetites because eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow my undirected self dies with no accountability. There's no authority. Have you ever thought about that before? Do you know that we're in this, I would call it a moral free fall, but the culture says there is no moral free fall because there's no transcendent, there's no absolute morality. And it's because, again, I am a personal autonomous agent. I am my own boss because there's nothing, there's no one that had anything to do with me being here. Nothing that has a personality. Just, again, an undirected sense of of microparticles becoming somehow this beautiful thing, this magnificent thing that I see in the mirror. And I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the magnificence of the human machine. But without an understanding of purpose and intentionality and creation and design, I am just some degraded ball of meat floating freeform in the universe. True or false? Is this too strong? Take a deep breath. Here's your homework. When you see Ben Shapiro, I don't endorse Ben Shapiro either politically or from a conversational perspective, because he's not really a conversationalist when he gets on a college campus. He's just a ranter. But here, the important person is Dr. Stephen Meyer. This is your homework. Ben does a great job just shutting up. It's not about politics. It's not about socialism. It's not about snowflakes. It's just Ben, who's a very intelligent man, actually being a great interviewer. I know a lot of Stephen Meyer. I've seen a lot of his interviews. This is 1 hour of very important conversation. Will you view this? Will you not watch Game of Thrones until later? Oh, I don't know about that, Pastor. You talk about moral turpitude. I know, me too. Will you find an hour this week to engage this conversation? And you have to stay with it, but in it is just so much richness from the mind of the designer to the mind of the one designed, now using his mind for the benefit of this conversation. Right? So what's our job? Our job is to be prepared, to stop drinking soup, absorbing it uncritically. Develop a framework for a biblical understanding of the beauty that is you and the purpose we all now have to engage the culture. It's time for the church to arise. Arise. Are we risen, church? Are we willing to engage? Are we willing to make a difference? Are we willing to not lead with rant? Are we willing to not submit to retreat? Are we willing to make a difference? The answer is, oh, I hope so. All right, hit it. You're out.